Where's the Revolution from Depeche Mode? And Dave Garn is here with us.
Hello.
It's nice to see you.
You too.
How are you?
I'm very good. Excellent, actually. In a very good mood today.
Good.
It's a beautiful day.
How was... It is a beautiful day, thank goodness. Spring has finally arrived.
Yeah. Yeah.
Give us a review of the Barrowlands gig you did.
Oh, my gosh. It was a lot of fun. We've been doing a few of these, like, small, like little sets. One in Zurich. We did one in Berlin. This was by far the best. I mean, to go and play in Barrowlands again, first of all, was kind of... Apparently, we played there in 1984.
Oh, my gosh.
But it was steaming. I mean, in every way. It was steaming, literally, because it was so hot in there. But the crowd were just... They loved it. It was... And it was... It felt so good. We were all looking at each other on stage a bit, kind of like... That was just a lot of fun, isn't it?
You know, so it was a real moment for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. And what do you get from your fans? Because obviously there is such devotion from around the entire globe. So they get so much from you in the words and just that kind of relationship. I just wonder what you get from them.
It really is a two-way relationship. The key always is, when you're performing, is to wait. They're there for you. They're there for you. And they kind of, our fans know that they're going to get a performance, certainly out of me. I've realised I can't go on stage and just sort of stand still. And, you know, I have fun with it. I kind of change into this character. And I've learned to really kind of like this character quite a lot.
Yeah.
So I have to leave him there, though.
How would you describe that character, then?
He's pretty mischievous and at the same time a lot of fun. And at the same time can be pretty dark at times, you know. But Yeah, and I like to roll with that. I really like going there. That's where I find the most interesting feelings and thoughts, to be honest.
Mm. It's a theatrical performance, isn't it? And also probably a cloak.
Yeah, it definitely is. I've always been able to escape into music. Growing up, Bowie, and still to this day, you know, is probably the... person that was instrumental in making me want to do what I do.
I wanted to just touch on this briefly because you knew David Bowie as a parent, as a fellow dad.
Yeah, a little bit. I would see our kids, our daughters went to school together for a short period of time. I wish I'd spoke to him more. He sort of disappeared for a while, and then I saw him again about a year later, and I said to my wife, you know, it's after I had a conversation with him, I said, I don't think Bowie's really well.
Oh, really?
I could see something in his eyes, so I thought I'd be fine, and then, of course, when I got the news that morning, I can't describe how I... It took me apart. It really did. I fell apart.
So it profoundly affected you. Did he ever know what he meant to you?
You know, one time when I went to see this little concert he did, a special performance of the album Low, a small concert in New York, and I got invited to it. My press guy came up to me halfway through the show and he said, you know, David wants to meet you after. And I was like, David who? And he was like, the boy, he wants to meet you after the show. You know, I was like, oh, I don't know, Mitch. But I went backstage and he came out of his dressing room and he was looking around like you do to see someone that you can go be with and be safe with. And he spotted me and we made eye contact. Then he came over to me and he talked and he just said to me straight away, I know you. And it was like this weird, eerie, like... I didn't think he was talking about music or anything. It was something else. And we didn't really talk about it. We just goofed around a bit. But it was wonderful meeting him like that. And then to meet him when we were in school, I never bothered him. I never talked to him about music or anything like that because we were just dads,
you know?
We were dads, like, watching our girls in, like, the school play or something. And
oh, my God, Dave, but how lucky are you?
He was magnificent. I mean, and he still will always be. I mean, you walk past my dressing room, you know, every other night and you'll hear some Bowie album blaring out of my dressing room before I'm going on stage.
Was it the fact that he was odd? He was a little bit different.
Yeah.
He represented all those people.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when I was very, very young, he totally spoke to me. And everything about him, the way he looked, the way he dressed, the way he sang, what he sang about, the melodies, everything about it, the combination, made me feel like I was not alone on this planet.
You covered Heroes, didn't you?
We did. Well, it was at Highline Studios. We were filming at the end of the recording of this album, Spirit. We did this, like, 360 recording of a kind of broken down, sort of punky versions. That's the only way I can describe them. And we did these kind of live performances of four or five songs from the album, and at the end of it, we thought it'd be a good idea to do Heroes. There was no one really there, it was just studio people, but we did this version, which I have heard. I have not seen the film of it yet, but it's really a beautiful version, and I got to say, singing it and performing it in that moment, I was pretty much moved to tears. I was kind of holding it back, but like, there's, and when I listen to it, I can hear that in my vocal.
Okay, let's play. Should we play Bowie and Heroes?
Yeah, lovely.
Heroes, of course, from David Bowie. Dave Garn from Depeche Mode is my guest on the show. There was a quote I read. I'll just truncate it a little bit. You just said, we're a little odd and we've always appealed to the odd out there. We found each other and it became a gang, and it's a pretty big gang
now. That sounds good.
there was a lot more too. That really does sum it up.
I couldn't say it better again. But yeah, there's this huge gang of oddballs, and you know, it took me a while over the years to realize that, but then to really embrace it, that we've always made this kind of odd left field kind of music. And I think we were a bit like that, right, together. That's what kind of pulled us together, and musically has pulled all these fans together that have been with us for many, many years.
How proud are you of what Depeche Mode has become now?
Well, it's really something that's beyond my wildest dreams. I think in the beginning, the first couple of years, we probably all thought, you know, we'll get a few years out of this, maybe, if we're lucky, let's have a good time. That good time lasted about 10 years. Then it was like, now we're really doing this. It's our real job. Things change as you get a little bit older. It's no longer about you're trying to get somewhere or impress somebody, or those kind of things, get something out of it. It's just really about the moment.
Let's do your gig diaries. So just some of the gigs that you've performed in the past. Tell me about the gig where nobody showed up. So one of the real... Do you remember those?
Maybe there was quite a lot of those, actually. I can name a few. I mean, the Bridge House in Canning Town, we were very lucky. This little pub in Canning Town in East London. Terry Murphy was the landlord, and he liked our demo. Me and Vince took a demo there, and he, for some reason, gave us a residency on Thursday nights. I remember one time playing a little 30-minute set, and there was literally a man and his dog, you know, like, standing at the bar, occasionally looking round, but looking more annoyed than anything else. Like, I wish they would just shut up. But we were very lucky. It's where we got our break. It's where Daniel Miller from Mute Records saw us, because he was mixing the sound for Fad Gadget, and Fad Gadget had sold out the place, this little pub. Terry gave us the support. He said, there's this guy's kind of electronic, kind of like what you do. I think you should support him. And Daniel, that's where Daniel kind of discovered us, if you like.
You were one of the first bands that I saw live. I was in the sixth form at school.
Really?
Yeah. Really? I think I might have been in the fifth year, and I just went along with all the sixth formers, and I came to Leicester de Montfort Hall.
Oh, wow,
And it was one of those life-changing moments, because I saw your music, and I knew that was the kind of music I absolutely loved, and these were my people. So you had a profound effect on me.
Isn't that amazing about music? I mean, it's like, I say that to my daughter as well, who's singing now as well, and she's just off to college in September.
Scary.
But she's got this amazing voice, and she knows, I know she feels that already, that somehow music, songs, words, melodies, they transcend everything. It always gives me a lot of hope for everything, for the state of humanity, if you like. It's like music is the one thing that I always feel like lifts me. This morning I was playing Nick Cave's record, Skeleton Tree, which is the most beautiful, profound piece of music from start to finish. And he's been making those kind of records for a long time now. But I had a couple of little moments, you know, where I was just listening and I just felt so connected to it. I love that. They lift me. I don't walk away from it going, oh, well, that was a bummer. It lifts me.
You feel roused. I know exactly what you mean. It's the intense emotion that this is in it.
Like, there's something about it. It's real. It's honest. I mean, Sigur Rós, for instance, I saw this performance before I left New York at Radio City, and it moves me to tears. I'm just lifted somewhere, and that's what music does.
Okay, another gig, a gig where everything went wrong. Is there anything that stands out where you had something of a disaster?
I just popped in my mind. The second time we visited New York, I believe it was 1982. Been there before to a great success. We played this place called The Ritz, which was like the place to play. I think it's called... Oh, I don't know what it's called now. Webster Hall now it is. And we played this show there. We had flown in that day to New York. So the big time change. We went on stage at like 2 o'clock in the morning or something like that. So everything went wrong. Everything, all the equipment broke down. I completely forgot all the words. A roadie of ours, Daryl, he was on the side of the stage and he was literally holding up the first lines to songs written on pieces of paper because we were so tired. I remember looking out to the audience and actually seeing a few people, you know, kind of doing a thumbs down type of, they weren't actually doing that, but their face said it all. Some guy actually pulled me aside. He said, "Dude, what happened to you guys? You used to be good," which was just like a year ago or something like. And I just looked at him like, "Is that bad, really?" You know. So, and we've done a few of those,
right,
but that
counts,
one is legendary in my mind.
Two more questions. The gig where someone incredibly famous was in the audience, where you've been tipped off, and so you walk out on stage thinking, "Oh my God, they're in the audience."
There's been a few of those. We did a Teenage Cancer thing for Roger Daltrey at the Albert Hall, and there was rumours that Jay-Z and Beyonce were coming down because Jay-Z was a big fan. And so that was, I don't know if they showed up, I don't know if they were there, but like...
In your head, they were there when you were performing.
I definitely kind of think I might try a bit harder when when there's people of that kind of like caliber there. But to me, if it was someone like Nick Cave or, yeah, that's to me would be more mind-blowing. I mean, to be honest.
And finally, the gig that has meant the most to you, is there a show that springs into your mind emotional?
Yeah, I gotta say probably the Rose Bowl in California. We sold out that place. It was, I think it was 1989, maybe 87, 8, somewhere around that time. Anyway, it was probably the biggest show that we'd ever played. And yeah, it was one of those gigs where I literally couldn't quite handle I think the last song we played was Never Let Me Down. I put my arms up in the air and started waving them from side to side. And just, there was just this sea of like, it looked like a giant wheat field. The stadium was lit up. And I just, during the song, literally in the sweat, there was tears pouring down my face. It was one of those nights, walked off, and I remember going up backstage, well, that's it then, isn't it? It's never, ever going to get better than that. That's it.
And how do you handle that?
It was pretty hard at the time. Yeah. I mean, a lot of booze, probably, like back to the hotel.
So how do you do it these days?
These days, it's I go and stare at the walls. No, I literally, I stare at the walls. It takes me a while, actually, after a show like that. Usually, I don't sleep at all. It won't be till the next day that I can come down from something like that. But I'm very lucky to be able to say there's been quite a few of those magical moments on stage. And when they happen, that's why we do this. It's just something where you go, wow, this is a really special spirit that is within us all, and you just have to kind of let go of everything and find it somehow.
Spirit being the title of the new album.
Yeah, I know, that was pretty corny. <wasn't it? laughs>
Listen, choose a song for me to play. You've mentioned so many different artists now. Let's play a favourite song of yours.
Off this album?
Favourite song, another artist.
Oh my. Well, we went through Bowie. I mean, there's endless songs by Bowie. Leonard Cohen, a song called Treaty, that's on this new album, which is just, I think, absolutely beautiful.
Okay, we'll do that. It's such a pleasure. I've loved talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Cheers. Thanks.